Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're continuing, a bit of a series that we seem to, have found ourselves on. You know, we've been talking a lot just around what's going on in terms of cloud computing. We've had people from Salesforce, we've had people from, Logicalis, we've had people from, all types of, companies talking to us about, cloud computing. And for today, we're talking to one of the country's largest banks, that is Absa. And, for today, we are joined by Andrew Baker, who is the Chief Technology Officer at Absa, just to hear about what they're doing just around, cloud computing and some of the developments that they have in the space. Andy, greetings to you.
Hi, thanks very much for the nice introduction.
I think maybe a good place for us to start is, maybe understanding, because, we hear a lot about, cloud computing. It really does seem to have become a bit of a buzzword in the current environment. As Absa, before we even get to as Absa, as a bank, right, what are the actual applications when it comes to, cloud computing?
Yeah. If you start as you or me at home, most people will have an experience of products like Office 365. So that's something they're familiar with. People will have experienced things like Google Drive. So there is already an experience in the public domain. They might not know that it's a cloud-based service, but people use Spotify. So you're starting to consume cloud-based services. Maybe it's not obvious that it's running in the cloud. Netflix is another example. So you've got the retail lens is already there. It's not badged as cloud. It's kind of born in the cloud. Financial services is slightly different. We are heavily regulated. And in South Africa, each country, each jurisdiction has slightly different lens on how they want the cloud to be and slightly different risk appetite. And so that creates two things. One, it creates an issue for the cloud providers to cope with the fact that we weren't born in the cloud, right? We were born in a data center. And so we have to get to the cloud. And that it turns out that journey in itself is non-trivial. It has a high degree of complexity in it. And so actually when you talk to financial services, unless you're talking to someone like Tyme Bank, typically you're talking about hybrid cloud, which is different, right, than being the me and you starting a startup and building it in the cloud. So for us, we seem like we might be a little bit slow than Spotify and Netflix, but actually the reality is we already provide digital services to our customers. And so the trick that we have to get right is being able to provide cloud-based services without those horrible moments where things go badly wrong and there's instability and the cost spike in it. And it is a very detailed process for a financial services company to safely move services into the cloud. And we started that about 3 years ago, and we've done it very organically, with the cooperation of the regulators. And we're really comfortable where we find ourselves, and we're very excited now to move on to the next leg, which is where we start to accelerate things a little bit.
And has that journey been, the same across the group, or is this sort of a South Africa-specific approach that you're talking about right now?
So that's a great question. Remember, we were part of Barclays, and so Barclays adopted AWS as their preferred cloud partner, so we inherited that decision many years ago. And really during the separation that we started to go, well, okay, this, we're going to split from Barclays. What is the right direction for us as a bank to go in? And it was definitely decided, not just from an economics perspective, but also from a customer experience perspective, that the cloud was the right place for us to be in. So it really was South African focused. And there's a couple of reasons for that. The first of which is AWS declared a little while ago they were going to build data centers in South Africa. So up until last year, we had to use Ireland as a data center or a destination, for our cloud services. And whilst it's only about 160, 170 milliseconds away, I don't know if you remember, I can't remember what it was, this year or last year when those undersea cables were cut.
Yes.
You know, it's never nice when you're running financial services and there's more and more undersea cables there, but there's always that risk. And so for us, one of our requirements was that the service be geographically located, you know, somewhere near our business, not at the end of an undersea cable. So that's why we were South Africa, because they declared that. What's interesting for me is cloud is spreading now. And so the word cloud is almost becoming ambiguous, because there's products like Outposts from AWS, which go in your data center. So you essentially got a private cloud in your own data center. And so for our African countries, that does create a very interesting opportunity, because they also don't necessarily want banking services at the end of, networks. They would prefer them to be domestically located. So yeah, it started off in South Africa, mainly because the AWS investment was here. But we see it sort of, with the consent of the regulators, it's starting to spread between all of the different countries. The interesting question I often get asked is, well, how do you design services that work for South Africa and for those other countries? And that's where a lovely piece of technology called Kubernetes comes in.
Yeah. One of the most, I won't say an obvious question, but because we are a business platform and there is all of this talk about, the cloud, one just has to wonder, economically, are you able to share in any way what type of investment is going towards this change? Because like you said, it's been a 3-year journey for APSA so far. And, and this is in South Africa, across the group, et cetera.
I like that question. So, and let me answer it with this might seem cryptographic, but it's actually quite simple, right? So there's two ways to do the cloud. You do the crusade, right, where everything's going in the cloud and you drain your data center into the cloud and you build up a load of debt on your balance sheet and you hope you can pay it back over 10 years. We didn't do that. That's not, for me, that's not a clever way to go to the cloud. So what we do, and this is how I'm answering your question. I'll give you one example. I wanted to do mobile disbursements across Africa. I want corporate customers to be able to pay into mobile wallets, right?
Yeah.
We don't generate a lot of income from that. It doesn't pay APSA a lot. We don't charge for that. It's a very cheap service, right? So I look at it doing it on premise. And when I add up database costs, storage costs, network costs, all the tools and machinery that we use as a bank to deliver that service, and the people and everything, fully loaded costs, it was tens of millions of rands a year to run that service. Four environments. You've got Dev, UAT, Prod, DR. So it's a big initiative. Now, I run that service in AWS today for $19. Right, it cost me $19 per month. Sorry, so you got times it by 12 and put it in rand. But you can easily see, right? And that's all using serverless compute. So whenever we do the cloud, we do it very intellectually, and we say, what's the play here? Remember, we have data centers, right? We can sweat those assets. There's no reason why we wouldn't use them. But we look at transforming services in there. And another example. So to answer your question about the investment. Actually, the actual answer is that it's a negative investment, right? We've spent less money than we would have spent had we done it on premise, right? And we've created a much better. So I have a negative, which doesn't sound right. I've negative investment in cloud, but I already have a return on every single investment. I've moved 1.5 petabytes, 5.5 billion emails that I have to search for, if there was a forensic case or whatever. They're all sat there and searchable in milliseconds. Before, it was 40 servers, an array of storage. All of that has gone encrypted and into the cloud.
Andy, I have to thank you for that answer, because I think that is the most straightforward answer I have received when it comes to that question. And I think, as you're talking, one of the big ones then is, when you're then looking at that investment, right, is it a matter of selling off existing data centers, right? Is it about selling off those data centers, or is it about repurposing what you're using those existing data centers for? And then any additional capacity you need, you then use public cloud.
I love it. You're asking the best questions I've been asked as well, right? So you've hit the heart of this, actually, right? So I've got a white space issue, right? I've got data centers. I buy them. They're fixed capacity. So if I look at ABS, say 6 or 7 years ago, we had 10,000 square meters of data center. As of the end of this year, we'll probably have about just over 1,000 square meters, right? 9,000 square meters of data centers, right? So what do I do, right? The reality is I'm becoming a micro hyperconverged player. Everything we do in ABS is hyperconverged. We don't build physical services anymore. It all sits on a hyperconvergence layer, whether that's in the cloud or on my data centers. So if I look at ABS's utilization of our data centers, you know, 6-7 years ago, on average, I was probably using about 5% of the compute in my data centers, right? So 95% of it doing not much. Now I've squashed 10, I do more work than I ever did before. Remember, I've taken all the workloads from Barclays. Those 10 countries, they're now in my data center. And I've gone from 10,000 square meters to just over 1,000. So now any piece of tin that goes in my data center works. But here's the challenge. It's fixed capacity. And so that model is dead. It's really dead because I don't know what fixed capacity. So that you could opine as an organization that I don't like multi-tenanted, right? Which is where the public cloud providers come in. You'll miss out on a lot of software and IP if you make that call. But what you can say is that guessing what size data center you need is not a business any sane organization should be in. And there enters companies like Teraco and Africa Data Centers, right? And they're saying, rent it. You can have your little space. If you really can't cope with the cloud, rent some space in me. And that's the right. So for us as an organization, maybe not everything goes into AWS. I've certainly got mainframe compute. I've got other issues, but for me to physically hold on to fixed capacity, it's not a business I want to be in. I want to be able to elastically scale. I could give you some great examples where we did some very clever things around elastic scaling to solve some of our customer problems that you just couldn't physically do if you had X thousand square meters of data center.
Now, I'm going to say, please indulge us with at least one example.
All right. Okay. So, I recently, right, I had lots of data warehouses. Okay. So, and that's not good, right? Because if I want to, as an organization, I want to talk to the regulators, I want to give them one view on my data. I don't want to join each data warehouse as a different technology. So we, as an organization, decided on Hadoop, and Spark Hadoop fundamentally. So not a huge fan of MapReduce for the techies out there. I prefer Spark. And so we said, right, we'll converge all these data warehouses into this one thing. But the million dollar question I got asked is, well, how much compute do you need? And the answer is, I don't know. Right, it depends. How efficient are your jobs? When you write your queries, how efficient are they? If you write good queries, not much. If you write bad queries, a lot. Right, and so we migrated and we shut all these data warehouses down. And then during the go live process at the end, some of the queries were not particularly well optimized. Right, so I was short 7,000 cores of compute. I needed 7,000 cores. Right, bit of a problem. Okay. So literally we just burst into AWS for month end, nicked 7,000 cores of compute to get to our regulator response and responded back. And we were like, that was pretty cool, right? We'd never been able to do it. Imagine trying to trolley in 7,000 cores, cable it up, set it up. We didn't. We just literally got one guy. It took him about 3 or 4 hours. He set it up with a CloudFormation, actually Terraform or CloudFormation script. Copied the infrastructure, boom, we lit the service up. We were working at 2 a.m. in the morning. It wasn't an ideal circumstance, but it was an amazing response from the team. And that, this stuff is just impossible unless you have access to cloud compute.
That's actually quite an incredible story. And I've had, you know, opportunity to actually go and visit Teraco's data centers in the east of Johannesburg, and it is massive. It's literally, I guess it's what I always pictured, you know, lots of server blades, lots of cooling, lots of cables, you know, and stuff like that. And one of the things that then becomes key is to do all of this stuff, you know, that you guys are doing, right? Have you found there to be a need for upskilling people, or, you know, switching up, or is it just is networking, you know, is programming, you know, do we need a different set of skills, you know, to be able to do all of the stuff that you've just, all of the flexibility that you've just, described to us? Does it need a new set of skills in the bank?
So, you know, I've been in the industry for a while. Every 5 years, I discount what I know to zero. So I self-impair myself, you know, so I have a balance sheet of knowledge, and in my mind, it goes to zero after 5 years, whatever I knew 5 years. And that's what we encourage in our teams, right? I'm AWS certified. I study all the time. And so the short answer to your question is nothing that you did 5 years ago should be that familiar today unless we're getting it wrong, right? And there are common threads, right? So, you know, Java as a language has evolved, and there are better ways of doing certain things in Java than there was 5 years ago, but you still, if you know how to use Eclipse, you know, you still know how to use Eclipse. So, what you see though is a defunctionalization of technology services. So in the old world, there were many, to get something done, here's your biggest change, right? To get something done, I would be the storage guy, you'd be the network guy, Carly would be the database girl, and between the three of us, we would sit and fight around how we're going to deliver a service. And what really changed is there were a bunch of APIs that came with the cloud that said, do it yourself, right? And so for apps as an organization, we're not quite do it yourself, we like do it to our standards, but actually, here's a bunch of APIs that will create you a database the way that we want to, and that's a big change, right? There's no, you know, in the old world there was multifunctional guys coming in, and there's this term full stack engineers. There's a lot more focus on people who can deliver a product in their team end to end. And what we saw with Barclays is if we needed every team to align with every team to deliver something, we would have taken 10 years to do that separation from Barclays. Instead, we said, whatever you want, call these APIs and it's given to you. We catalog it, we understand it, we know where it is, but basically the biggest change is self-service, being able to have teams that can provide services for themselves. And then it's evolving even further with this introduction of serverless compute, where you're literally just delivering packages to run in without a server at all, just behind an API fabric. And that starts messing with people's heads, right? So the provisioning is the biggest change, when nobody does it for you, you do it for yourself.
Okay. And on the, I guess, continuing with that issue of skills, I do understand you guys have a partnership with AWS just around upskilling people and all of that. Where does that, I guess, go, you know, on the spectrum? Like, where do you see a program like that? Especially if someone is experienced as yourself, you're saying that they discount their knowledge, you know, after 5 years and all that.
So for me, it's a way of life. You know, my background is I designed high frequency trading algos. I don't do that now. I do payments and I do, you know, Hadoop and I do. And so the same for my team, you know, my expectation of them is no different to the expectation of myself. I think, the skills guild or the cloud incubator we've got is not a short-term program for me. It's a lifelong commitment. We will constantly be learning and scaling our knowledge all the time. I'm not planning on stopping that anytime soon.
Okay. And the last two questions as we, you know, round up the discussion is, you know, just for the people that are listening and might be saying, okay, fine, maybe we have some geeks that are listening, you know, fellow geeks that want to, you know, that are thinking about this career. They have, you know, been looking at that AWS certification and have been procrastinating on it and all of that. Your own career, how has that path been?
Random. And unstructured. So I haven't really focused on a career path at all. I've just focused on knowledge, and that would be my only advice to give to someone else. You know, for me, a career path is a little bit incidental, and it can go up and it can go down. I have no desire to stay at a certain level within an organization. The bit that's always attracted me is complex problems. So for engineers out there, one of the nicest things that ABSA did, which was like a huge deal for me a few months ago, we introduced the concept of a principal engineer. So we said to people that if you're an awesome techie, you don't have to become a manager to further your career. We will recognize you as an engineer, and we've got six now in ABSA. We have six principal engineers. So if I went back and I did my time again, I'm not sure I would have ever left engineering. I love engineering. I still code today. And so for any of the geeks out there, if you want to have fun and learn a lot and be challenged and be stretched, then there's probably no better place in Africa or South Africa that I've experienced than ABSA right now. It's got an awesome leadership, and we're very open to scaling local skills up in Africa. You'll notice that we're not going out and doing big deals with consultancies and flying people in from the UK and Germany and whatever else. Our sole focus is upskilling South African and African resources so that we can be an African bank with African IP.
All right. And I think, you know, on our last point, it sort of ties into all of that. Maybe you can talk to us about the evolution, you know, of what you've seen in terms of that role, the role that you occupy right now, because you're the chief technology officer. In some companies, we hear of a chief information officer. In some other companies, we hear of a chief information and technology officer. So the invariable CTIO. So could you just talk to us as we round up about that?
Yes. Okay, someone asked my wife the other day, she said, what does your husband do? And she's like, yeah, C something. I don't know what the next letter is, you know, and I feel the same way about it as she does actually. You've got chief digital, chief data, chief data, and really, you know, for me, I'm not sure that those things all make sense. You know, they are just different. But how do you have digital technology and, I don't know, information? And it's just code at the end of the day. And so for me, there's two types of disciplines in a technology organization. There is a discipline that's focused, there's a pedigree technologist, and then there's a kind of operational piece, which is more finance, regulatory, and all those other things. What you call them, I guess, varies from organization to organization. But yeah, I definitely see organizations like to slice up the role in lots of different ways. And that often creates a deadlock because, you know, they all need to hold arms to move forward. And that in itself can be a little bit of gymnastics.
No, that's quite a fascinating discussion. Thank you so much for being with us, Andy. We really, really appreciate you, you know, taking your time with us.
Awesome. Thanks for the time.
So that's been us. We're talking to Andy Baker, who is the Chief Technology Officer at ABSA, giving us some insight around what they're doing with cloud computing. There's a lot that's been said about cloud computing, hybrid cloud, on-prem, you know, versus public cloud, all of these things. And he was just explaining in practical terms how they're using it as a financial services institution, and also just explaining, you know, some of the issues that are happening, you know, around, you know, this debate of costs, you know, when it comes to implementing cloud strategies and, you know, going forward in all of that.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
yet another fascinating and very geeky conversation about cloud computing. But one of the things that I liked, and I did say it during the interview with Andy, is the fact that he was able to crystallize and actually give some concrete examples of just how they're using cloud computing. Because sometimes when it comes to this stuff, it really does feel, you know, a bit complicated and a little bit, you know, theoretical in some of the conversations that are being had about cloud computing. But I really liked this one from just giving us those solid examples and also providing, you know, some of the cost estimates to say that back in the day to run certain systems, it would have cost them, you know, tens of millions of rands. But, you know, running, you know, this specific service, they were able to do it, you know, at about, I think he said $19 a month. Right, just because they have, you know, that that ability to scale by having, you know, that relationship with you know, Amazon Web Services or AWS. So that in itself really, it just speaks to, I guess, the advantages, because most of the time we talk a lot about, you know, what is cloud computing, what's happening. We always hear about the so-called cloud, but now we can actually hear some of the examples, and especially coming from one of the largest financial institutions in the country, it really does help to make it, you know, solid and tangible, you know, to understand what's going on. So I definitely enjoyed it from, you know, that point of view. And going forward, it will be interesting to see, you know, what the development of that platform is going to be like, you know, cloud computing as a whole, because it really does sound as if you've got that mix between, you know, having your own data centers or, you know, storing things in physical data centers as opposed to, you know, going to the Microsoft Azure's or the Amazon Web Services sort of side of things to get public cloud services from those type of providers. So, you know, going forward, it'll be good to see. And also because we've had those investments from both Amazon and Microsoft, both building the hyperscale data centers in South Africa, it also means that this is going to be an ongoing conversation. And secondly, it means that it's going to be one of those things that we keep hearing about. And more importantly, it'll be good to see what type of an economic benefit it will have on the country as a whole. So that's been it. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the Podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.